Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at Burrow.com/ACAST. That's Burrow.com/ACAST. Burrow.com/ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
And now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCB 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery, and I'm Al Warren, and Mr. Michael Hawley is on the other side of the country.
Yes, that's right, Al.
We've got the one and only Damon Manx from Last Waltz Publishing. Thanks for being here, Damon.
Hey, thanks for having me. How are you guys doing today?
Great.
Yeah. And we've got one of your new guys in here. We're going to break in a new guy for you. Just got a new book out. It's called Down by the River Walk. I can say that. And the guest, that's Mr. Matt Scott. So thanks for being here, Matt.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, so here we go. So, Damon, so when you start with a new an author, do you have a particular thing you look for in a book?
I have a particular thing that I'm not looking for, definitely, which is the same old thing. I'm looking to be surprised. I'm looking for tight prose. I'm looking for a creative idea that I could sit down and read and be entertained by it. You know, I think every author is unique and different. And if I can sit down and enjoy the story myself, then I'm sold. Yeah.
So it doesn't matter, in a way, how, let's say, how well they write per se, but it's more about maybe the idea or the story they give you.
Yeah, I think it definitely stems from story and idea. You know, I mean, are there any really truly original ideas out in the world? You know, maybe they come along every now and then, but I think the way that you tell it and, you know, everybody's personal take on how they present their story is what makes it fresh and exciting. And, you know, the ghost story, you know, we've heard it a million times, but, you know, still you get ghost stories that are like, wow you and knock you off your feet. You know, and that's what Matt has the ability to do. He presents these interesting situational stories that are creepy and mood setting, and the endings always kind of like hit you like, oh, I don't know. You know, like your feeling, your emotions are still resonating after you finish the story.
Huh. Does that ever worry you if you sit down with an author and they've got this really creepy story and they know where you live?
I don't let them know where I live. So. That's the beauty of the internet and working through remote.
Yeah. Well, you can always just give them Mike's address. I'll text it to you later and
course.
No problem, you know, and they can head out there. No, it's really interesting. But you are into this, I don't know if you want to call yourself horror or suspense or how you want to classify yourself, but you're really into kind of a darker story, if I'm right.
I guess that's accurate. I'm into the darker stories and something that brings out emotion.
All kinds of emotion or just like fear and anger?
Well, no, actually I like fear and I like unsettling, but you know, I also like to, you know, tug at the heartstrings. You know, I'm certainly not the goriest writer, not the scariest writer, but you know, I do like to leave the audience, you know, feeling some kind of emotion. Even, you know, I have stories that the occasional story that has a happy ending or one that says, oh my God, I can't believe you did that. I was crying because you did that to that character, you know? So I, an emotional response doesn't have to be in the negative sense, you know, preferably not in a negative sense, you know, preferably in a.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's you know, emotion. Jeff Oliver and all that, like when this stuff, there's kind of a certain beauty in the darkness in a way, right? It's just about making people aware of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Something that, you know, because we all have that part of us, you know, you can't have light without dark. So we all have positive emotions. We all have negative emotions. And if you can touch into that and relate it, you know, help other people relate to the way you're feeling, because certainly a lot of my negative emotions are transcended onto the page. And I hope that, you know, gives people a little inside view of what's going on in my head or heart.
Do you add levity too, to kind of get that roller coaster of emotions?
Yeah, I do. There's a lot of humor, tongue in cheek, little sentences in between, little metaphors that maybe don't go quite, you know, and not the average metaphor. Something, you know, I think I have one, the road twisted up the mountain like a crooked politician.
Perfect timing. You know, perfect timing.
Right, exactly. So, yeah, I do like levity. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there has to be a timing to it, right? Or it might not work, especially in a dark story. You have to watch where you put that humor, right, and what place it goes into.
Yeah, no, their timing is everything probably in all genres of writing, unless, of course, you're writing the comedy to, you know, straight up comedy. But in the horror field or in suspense, yeah, well-placed. Well-placed prose, well-placed metaphors. Yeah, the comedy can't be overt, you know, just little flavor, like seasoning in the sauce.
Mm. Yeah, making my nipples hard. Okay. Yeah, so Matt, I have to wonder, this is your first book, I believe, correct?
Yeah, it is. My first collection.
So what about writing and or what perhaps happened in your life that made you decide that you're going to go ahead and write and get it out there in the world?
Oh, I don't know if there was a moment. I was in grade school, I remember, like third or fourth grade, and I was copying songs down off the radio on, you know, pen and paper, and going to the classroom selling them for a nickel.
Oh, song. Entrepreneur too.
I was always writing stuff down. Saturday morning cartoons, I would watch one and then write the next one, you know, for next week.
I mean that there's a lot of people that'll do that, but to actually sit there as yourself and kind of go, well, I can do this and put it out, you know, and people will buy it. I'm going to make a, you know, do this for a job.
Oh, when I got serious about it? Yeah. Honestly, 10 years ago. Yeah, 10 years ago is when I honestly started sending stuff out. Just doing the work, honestly, you know, really, really putting myself into it.
So what about you makes you write these darker stories?
I write about what scares me. And what scares me is not having control and how you react in situations. Like Bob was saying, there's darkness everywhere. I mean, I get a lot of my ideas from the news. And unfortunately, sometimes it's more local than I want it to be. But yeah, it's how people react in these exaggerated situations that I can come up with that I really like. And yeah, the endings are usually dark because endings usually are.
So do people run out and buy all the toilet paper in your stories?
They don't have no. By the time we get to my people, this shit,
oh my,
it's already hit the fan. It's done. They're just trying to deal.
It's too late to get toilet paper. Yeah. Well, there we have it. I know that one. So how do you start your stories? Like, these are short stories you were saying. So if this like, do you start with some sort of a question? Do you like have a question of something and then you kind of run with it? Or do you start with a character?
I usually start with the character, honestly, just somebody that popped into my head. A line that someone said throughout the day, and I can build on it and picture a person around it and then just make the scene around him. Or her.
So when you create that character, do you kind of do you picture them in your mind, and does it become like a real person and you start hearing voices?
I try to put them down on paper as much as I can, and then the following day while I'm at work, I'll have some conversations with them, you know, while I'm going about my business.
Do you ever wake up in the morning and find mud on your shoes? And
no, thank God.
Maybe a shovel. I'm just asking because this could be interesting. Do you actually want someone to get something out of your story, or is it just entertainment?
The short stories, I would say, are entertainment. I mean, they're kind of apocalyptic, dire. The projects I have in the pipeline, you know, coming up, a lot more meaning to them, you know, a better message. I guess I'll have a more positive spin to them.
Oh, the people actually live then.
Well, the longer it worked. Yeah. Yeah.
So you fear about the end of the world sort of thing? Is that kind of a.
No, again, I don't fear the inevitable. I only worry about how other people are going to take it.
So in essence, what would you say your stories are about in this book? How many do you have in the book?
There's 14.
14. And yeah. What's kind of your favorite story in it?
I think the lake. I really enjoyed writing it. It's actually one of the longer ones in it. More detail. A really kind of more of a developed arc in that one. More fleshed out. That's my favorite.
And what happens in the basic story? What's the basic premise of that story?
A grandfather is taking his son fishing to his favorite pond. That's winter time. It's just muddy and dank looking. Anyway, they find a body in the lake, and throughout the waiting on the police to get there, it's out in the country. Throughout the time they wait on that, the grandfather calls his time in Vietnam and something bad that happened there. And so the story jumps around between the two timelines.
Well, it's an interesting idea. You know, it's so does he eat the kid?
not that one anyway.
Oh, there is one like that. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Well, Damon, what are you doing?
Wow. They just kind of find me. I don't know.
I guess so.
It would almost be a comedy of errors, like a worst case scenario kind of thing, if it weren't for a little bit of humor thrown in every once in a while.
With you guys both, I wonder, do you worry about being sort of politically correct, and or about upsetting or what they call triggering an audience. So, like, what do you think, Damon? Do you?
You know, that's interesting. So, it depends on the story because at one point, you know, I wanted to really write about a certain issue. I wanted to write about marginalization, and I saw we spoke about this before. You know, I was in prison. And I was watching the majority of people in there really marginalize the guys in there who were homosexual and had different sexual orientations than them. And I found this so, you know, appalling that I wanted to write about it in a horror genre. So, you know, being I wanted to point light at racism and bigotry and homophobia. And I did it in a story called Abigail. And I think I did it pretty well. If I do say so myself, I'll try to be humble here, you know, but, and, you know, at other times though, you know, I have other books where, you know, it takes place in 1979 and the guy is a complete dick, bigot, you know, and the words that come out of his mouth are not politically correct, but to be true to that time period and to be true to that character that I'm writing, I can't water it down, you know, and, you know, I'm not going to be overt and I'm, you know, they're certainly not my feelings, but, you know, certain characters behave certain ways. And I think if we, you know, if we water it down or we ban a book today, you know, we're burning it tomorrow.
Yeah.
So, you know,
Yeah, well, and not only that, I think it makes the character not believable, right? You kind of get into that area where you kind of make them not sound very real.
Yeah, you can't do that, or you're nobody. You know, you're going to have a one-dimensional character, and your book's going to fall flat.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, the Karens will buy it. Karen Edition One. You know, and so Matt, what's your opinion on that? Like, do you just write what you feel and you don't really care what people think, or how do you approach it?
I approach it. Yeah. I let the characters, be as real as they can. I mean, if it's something that will come out of their mouth as despicable or racist or horrible as it is, they're going to let it fly. But again, like Rob, it doesn't necessarily like what I, you know, anything about me. It's just, you know, real for them, and try to make it as authentic as it is, not just like a, you know, middle-aged white guy.
The series of short stories, you're now dealing with tons of characters throughout that, you know, because so many short stories. Do you enjoy that, having so many characters and just having short stories?
I do. What I've gotten into the last couple, writing so many of these, I'm starting to piece together some worlds for them, you know, some spinoffs and tying them together and kind of world building, and I'm getting really excited.
Oh, so then so you have spinoffs on like larger novels of just one.
Yeah, and I'm not even talking about novels necessarily. One character will transition into another story, and you know, I can peel off from all of that from the short story perspective, and I really like it.
You never get writer's block.
No, I was just talking to Rob the other day about it. I jump around so much when I'm actually sitting down writing. Have two or three different things working, different notes in front of me. If I don't know how good it is, but yeah, if I hit a wall somewhere, I'll jump to the next one and write a few pages.
So who's the boss, you or the characters?
Oh, they are. They're annoying. They're relentless, and I love and hate every one of them.
Do you find they talk to you when you drive?
Oh, everywhere. Yeah, it's like I said, I've gone to work. This is not for any law enforcement out there, but I've gone to work sometimes not even remembering if any of those lights were green.
So?
Yeah, pulled into the parking lot. It's like, hey. I think I just got the story, but I hope everybody's okay.
You don't have any weapons, and you say, oh, did I shoot them up, or you didn't do that?
No, this was all just vehicular.
Yeah, no body in the trunk when you get home.
No.
Wow. Do you have a favorite character?
One that I'm working on right now is becoming my new favorite. It's kind of a cross between Deadpool and Scooby-Doo.
So what is it about a certain character that becomes a favorite? Is it because they have a lot of characteristics that you'd like to have yourself, or maybe that you already have?
I think realism for me, and I don't mean that. I mean, they know who they are. So yeah, that's appealing to that type of character.
Is there any time you get a character that you end up not liking?
Well, none of them. Well, only a few of them get to go on to other stories. So
you kill them off then.
It's kind of a one-off for a lot of.
Have you ever used a character from someone you know?
Oh, most of them are based off of people I know.
So
in one way or another, yeah.
So who do you use for the bad ones that you want to hurt?
People no longer in the picture.
You're gonna give us some names.
On the safe side.
Give us some names. Well, let's write this down
not even going.
Oh, come on! Like, I've got Facebook open. We can see who they are.
Yeah.
Oh, geez. Well, where do you think the ideas come from for you?
Like I said, I really get a lot of them from current events, things that are happening, and then I'll just exaggerate it and throw some stuff.
It's interesting. Wow. So, Damon, what else have you got coming out with Last Waltz? Now, you're doing something with James G. Carlson, aren't you?
Yeah, that's correct. James and I just had our release of Hacked In 2, which is two novellas and one book. It came out under his publishing company, Gloomhouse Publishing. He has a story in it called Red Falls, which is about a couple that goes, they hear about a wine festival and they take off into the backwoods of Pennsylvania. And when they get there, this is nothing short of deliverance banjo country. And it just gets weirder and weirder as they go. They meet up with some other, you know, very, very modern woke people who just happen to be there for this non-existent wine festival. And the mayor is the owner of the bar, and he's also the owner of the hotel. And it gets really weird really quick. James did a really great job on this.
Is that based on a real town, or is that?
James actually based that story on an experience he had going to a wine festival in Pennsylvania.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how you know, where the imagination took over, and I'm going to draw the line and say I'm pretty sure I know what isn't real, but you know, I think a lot of it is based on what really happened.
Darn it, it sounded like a town for me. You know, maybe not.
Yeah, so I wrote a story for that called Deacon, which starts out as a zombie apocalyptic story. You know, we come up on two brothers who were actually kind of backwoodsy brothers themselves, and they're taking advantage of the people who are left living in this apocalyptic zombie atmosphere. And in steps a guy named Deacon, who is dressed as a deacon with the collar for the Catholic Church. And he carries a spear gun, and he takes out these bad guys in this world in a vigilante-style fashion. And he's the savior of this dystopian world. And after that, we cut to a scene where a beta reader is reading the story that the reader has just read, and he goes to the author and says, you know, Damon, I don't know why you're writing stuff like this. This is totally out of your wheelhouse. You know, you've written Piece by Piece. You've written Abigail. You know, did you fall off the wagon? I mean, what's going on with you? So we take it from there, and this is a story. This is a juxtaposition of two stories, the Deacon story unfolding and the Damon Manx story unfolding at the same time, as an author is struggling with a story that brings up his own demons. And at some point, fiction and reality cross over. This story, like, affected me on a major level because a lot of my own demons got put on the paper.
So when you did that, is that kind of primarily more for your own growth, or let's say your own sort of therapy in a way, or working through things, or did you want something from your readers?
You know what? I was going for, you know what? I mean, honestly, I don't even know, because like I wrote that opening scene with the zombies damn near a year ago, and I didn't know where this story was going to go. Like I was with an old publishing company. I took the story back. I left them. I opened Last Waltz, and I didn't know, you know, what to do. And then James came to me about the idea of the book. And for me, a story happens when it's the convergence of two ideas. You know, one small idea doesn't usually do it. And then I started thinking, like, well, you know, what if I put myself into this? And I started going with it. And some of it was factual. Some of it was, you know, I played with the truth a little bit. And I don't think it ended up being therapeutic for me. Actually, it kind of bothered me a little more than than it did. It gave me like a real mind. And that's kind of what I wanted to bring out, like, in the reader. Like, I wanted them to really think about that line between the fiction of a story and the reality of the story taking place as you're reading it. And the relationship between the author and the reader.
Well, it's kind of appropriate nowadays, because nowadays, you, especially in politics, facts aren't really facts now. Is that how that works?
So. Yeah, you know, well, I remember somebody asking me, you know, well, why can't we just have, you know, the news or a politician say the truth? And I made the mistake of saying, you know, well, which version of the truth do you want to hear? And they're like, no, you know, because you're getting it wrong. The truth is the truth, you know. There is no version of the truth. There is truth. And you can go to the left of that truth. You can go to the right of that truth. But truth is truth.
Oh, yeah.
But I'll be damned if I know what it is.
Yeah. God damn it. Oh. You know, but, you know, it has to be therapeutic in a little bit, because even when things bother you or they get in under your skin and you're all really screwed up from it kind of thing, just thinking about it and working through it, in a sense, you come out of it, like, because you've come out of this book and, well, I don't know, maybe there's some bodies in your house, but you come out of this book probably better than you went into it, right?
Yeah, well, you know what, I did bring up some real demons of mine. I brought up my battle with heroin, which I 10 years clean in October. I brought up the time I went into prison. I brought up my divorce. And I brought up, you know, the struggle of that an author who chooses sobriety walks on a day-to-day basis. So there's that going on in the page. I had fun with it too, but, yeah. So, you know what, in the end, I want to say it's good to look at yourself and re-examine the things that have formed you, you know, or deformed you at times. Mm. And that happened, you know, so, but, you know, it was a bit of a white knuckle experience as it was going, but now that book is out, like, I feel really good and I'm really proud of what we did. So it was
good. Yeah. So it was worth it. I mean, I always hear that it's kind of almost like, I haven't had that issue of alcohol or drug dependency, but people that I know that have always kind of describe it as it's almost like a demon that stays with you for your whole life, and you've got to keep it at bay. So it's pretty intense.
Yeah, it definitely is. I think as, you know, as you build up more tools for battling that demon and your resolve gets stronger on a day-to-day, the fight isn't as vigilant as it was in the beginning. But, you know, it's a fight that could easily go either way if you were to allow it.
You know, when you do something like that in a story like this, are you one of the characters? Do you put yourself as one of the main characters then?
Well, Damon Manx is actually...
Is it the real...
The main character.
Is it the real Damon?
Oh, wow.
Well, is, you know, that's actually, you know, the Damon, Deacon, Dylan, there's a lot of guys in this story that, you know, could be the real Damon. That question is answered at the end of the story, more or less. But yeah, Hacked In 2 by Gloomhouse Publishing, available at Amazon.com and Godless.com.
How is that going? How's the Godless thing going?
Right now I have two short stories that I just put out on Godless, and The Dead Girl is number 2 in new release bestsellers right now, and The Devil's Well is, I think, like number 6 on the bestseller list. And if anybody wants a free story, The Dead Girl is available free right now at godless.com.
Oh,
well, get on that, Michael. What are you doing?
I'm there.
Yeah,
I will be.
Yeah, it's a nice little short story. Yeah, you know, you go download it. They're all, you know, Godless is in digital format. You go there and you put in your information, and they give you the PDF, the Mobi, and the EPUB version of whichever titles you choose. And it's a real convenient, and it's a real happening site. You know, I think they're doing a great thing for the indie community, and they'll be growing. I think, you know, next year I can't even imagine how much bigger they're going to get, but they're just going to continue to grow and expand their repertoire of authors and publishing companies that they work with.
Great.
Do you have to be Satanist to join, or?
No, absolutely not. No, you know, there's.
There you go.
It helps.
Well, that's, it helps.
No, I just. Are you still getting any sort of backlash with that sort of thing, or do you hear any sort of is that dying down?
You know, that was like a
one
hit wonder kind of thing. You know, and people, you know, are just, you know, until you're how do I say it? You know, there's topics that we are all ignorant about and that we don't know until we investigate and find out. So, you know, somebody might have said something prior to investigation, and that got me a little, raised my hackles. But, yeah, it was nothing. And, you know, just because something is named Godless, it has nothing to do in a religious connotation.
Well, should be. All hate mail.
Well, it's more so like taking, you know, power away from giant entities such as Amazon. So now, you know, indie authors are selling their material on their own through a different platform without Ma Bell or Amazon.com taking the vast majority of their royalties.
Right.
You know, yeah. So, I mean, that. So we are Godless.
Yeah. Well, that's a good thing, you know, in a sense. I think that, I think it's a positive thing, you know, at the end of the day. People, it's hard to make a living at writing anyway. So I think that the more you can get out of it, the better.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so what else is on the burner for you, or is that kind of it right now, or you got some more things in the cooker?
Yeah. And at the risk of, I'm not going to vague book, but, you know, I can talk about this, but I can't really talk about this. Okay.
I could tell you, but I'd have to kill you.
Yeah. And I'm not that tough guy. So I have a spot in an upcoming anthology. I can't tell you the anthology, but it's going to be, it's a really, you know, there's some really good big names in this anthology, and I'm really honored to be a part of it. And we should be looking closer to a reveal on this towards September, October sometime. And I am currently working with an agent out of New York City on a proposal for a nonfiction book about my addiction, my time in prison, and the man I met while I was there who helped me turn my life around. And I'm feeling really good about this, but I'm finding out like what goes into a nonfiction book proposal. And I've literally been working on this for 6 months, and I hear that's nothing. You know, I hear it could take another year and a half before we get something. Yeah. But that's, you know, that's a real positive thing. And the guy I'm working with is, he represents some very big names. And
so that could be, you could transition from fiction to nonfiction, and there was receptivity there then?
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, honestly, I think writing is writing. I think nonfiction is a little harder to write than fiction.
Hear that, Al? We're great.
Well,
yeah.
Well, it's just, you have a lot more hurdles.
I definitely do.
You know.
Yeah. And your prose has to be tight, you know, and your storytelling has to be spot on and no diversions. You know, you've got to keep the reader there, you know. So, you know, hats off to you guys for being able to do that, because I'm just learning how, you know, I'm trying to become a better writer every day.
Well, you'll get there. You just keep working at it. And then each time you do it, it gets easier.
Yeah. Yeah. You know. So, you know, my first attempt at this the proposal alone. So 30 pages of a nonfiction proposal that's supposed to go to, you know, five different publishing companies. And it was the hardest 30 pages I've ever had to write in my life.
Oh,
yeah. Well, I just end up sleeping my way to the top. That's how I get it done. You know, you just get around there, and there's always a few people you can bang, and then at the end of it, you're done. And then, then it's easy after that, you know. Take it from me.
I may have missed.
Yeah, been there, done that. And,
yeah.
You know, I will sell myself in a second. That's no problem. You know. So, Matt, what's your next plan? Where are you going now after this? And has Damon got some plans for you? Has he got you, you know, out there doing something? Or what's going on for you?
Well, thanks to Damon. Right now, yeah, I've got Down by the Riverwalk, Amazon and Godless, and nothing coming out just yet, but working on three or four really big projects that I'm excited about.
Wow. So are you going to stick to this type of fiction writing and kind of horror and that scary sort of stuff, or are you planning on going somewhere else?
Well, the longer ones I'm finding I are steering away from true horror, I think, honestly. Yeah, they're scary and they're gross, but I wouldn't call them horror, the ones I'm working on.
Huh. So you're kind of getting to know the characters better then. You're putting that out.
I am, yeah. And as I said, the ones that I'm building on and they're showing up in different projects, they're really being fleshed out. And maybe can carry stories of their own. We'll see what they tell me.
Wow. That's interesting. So what are you going to – so you guys still – you still have to work a regular job there, Matt, or?
I do.
Yeah. Street corner? What?
No.
Selling drugs.
I got pushed out of that by a guy with a cart.
Oh. Well, kill him off in the next book. What I do. Anyway. Well, you guys are a pleasure. And it's a thrill that you came on. And everyone, we got a couple of books. We got lots to do for you here. You got to go to Godless and pick up some books. You've got Matt Scott, you've got Damon Manx, and you got James G. Carlson on that one too. So Down by the Riverwalk is Matt Scott's book, and Hacton 2 is Mr. Mank's book. So these guys, you know, they need some help, especially Matt. You know, he's out there selling, and even the man with the cart pushed him out of there. Jesus.
That's right.
He needs food. He needs, you know, get out there, buy a book. Anyway, well, guys, it's been a pleasure, and thank you for coming on the show.
Well, thank you for having us. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
Tired of wasting time trying to decide what to watch on your streaming service? Go to our website and look for the Martino Movie Reviews.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.